Have your breakfast without the blues. Sunday morning, 10 a.m., KWVA, Eugene.
Mark time. Hey, that's cute.
Anarchy Radio is an editorial collage made up of the voices of guests, callers, and its host, John Zerzan. The opinions expressed are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of KWVA, Eugene, or anyone else.
That's right. You're listening to Anarchy Radio on KWVA, Eugene. There will be no show next week, but we are going strong today with telephones and Kathin in the studio. 541-346-0645 is the number. We are going to start off with some music from the Adbusters compilation, Live Without Dead Time.
Hello there. It's the August 17th edition of Anarchy Radio, and Kathin is indeed here.
Yes, I am.
Welcome.
From the Northland of Portland.
Yeah. Let me just take care of a couple of things. As Carl said, there won't be an Anarchy Radio show next week. I'm going to be up in the Cascades, and I thought it was getting back Tuesday, but it's Wednesday, and I really just found that out a day or so ago. Just going to take a little break, and I think Carl's going to be here during that time playing music. Good, Carl will be here. One thing, I just want to throw this out too. A very dumb spam hoax visited my email account last week, just in case anybody still might have a question about it, and threw out this thing to my approximately 100 contacts on that email account, saying that I'm stranded in London, I'm desperate, please send $17,000 or something. Like, everybody got this message. I got a call at 5 in the morning from Rabi in Delhi in India. You know, John, what's going on? In other words, but I think nobody sent any money, and of course it was just one of these automated rip-off things. So, and just the other addition to that is that Anarchy Radio at Hotmail does not exist. It was hacked, frozen, and now it's a black hole. Can't get any messages out. It is done. In fact, on my website, there's a different Hotmail address, but I'm using my Gmail account. So anyway, just a little housekeeping on that.
But if you write it, you won't get a bounce back.
Right.
I'll get no notification that your account isn't working.
Evidently
so
not. That's
anybody
the big
who's
headache.
Written,
is
you
still
don't
waiting
know.
For a response, and they'll never get one because I didn't get the message. Anyway, happy birthday, Carl.
Why, thank you very much.
You and Napoleon enjoyed a Sunday
that's
birthday,
right?
Right?
It was me and Napoleon hanging out together.
Oh, that's great.
Over by the Waterloo.
Over by the Waterloo.
No, we did. We went to Waldo.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
You had to kind of portage in there, is that right?
Yeah, we canoe camped. It was fun.
Super.
We, our original destination had its water dropped by 12 feet, so we couldn't go there.
Oh.
Waldo was plan B.
Huh. Oh, good for you. That sounds great. Well, I wanted to get into this a little bit. We'll just see how much. I mean, calls would influence this. But last week, anybody who listened to the show last week, there were a bunch of people here. There were a bunch of us in the studio, including five Christians from the Christian Primitivist Gathering in Portland the weekend before last. And we had some good calls. We had some good discussion. And Kevin, I mean, just throw this out. Just Cole, just a general thing. Correct me on this, but I kind of thought you were like, oh, come on, you know, kind of, I wouldn't say hostile, but skeptical. And I got the hint that you kind of ended up a little bit less skeptical, maybe? Or what did you, I know you weren't able to catch everything on the weekend, but what was your hint?
Well, I would say I was enthusiastic to see 200, 300 people give up a weekend, sit in a church, break down in workshops and engage in sincere discussion about questions of anarchism, primitivism, under the auspices of religion, and a lot kind of being Mennonite. You know, I was just trying to figure out where are these Christians coming from and how do they put this all together. By the end of the conference, I'd say I still had questions. I think that, you know, I mean, I'll own up to a certain amount of skepticism. I think that engaging in discussions, that there's a certain civility or politeness that emphasizes agreement and the positivity of dialogue and having the discussion. But I felt a certain amount of frustration with taking on the difficult questions as to, you know, whether we call it monotheism or we go back to a polytheism. My understanding religion really is as we start to go from being quadrupeds to on 2 feet and using tools and developing to where we are today, that very, very early on, part of civilization's development is religion. And so, you know, those are the kind of meaty things. So to jump to a place where you're getting lovely group of people, young people, motivated people who want to work honestly with people in changing the world.
Yes.
The Christianity just remains, to me, even after the conference, I really would have to say I didn't feel any clarity on it.
Uh-huh.
I felt they're good people, sincere people, but I still don't understand.
Yeah, I mean, I just have to say I heard that. You know, it's still, and the thing is that more vexing and frustrating, or is it also intriguing? And I do get surprised by some of the answers. I'm not trying to nail anybody, but I'm trying to see how they pull this off. And that's become more out front, I think, which is to the good. And they feel, I think, somewhat... in fact, I got a message from Nikesha just a couple of days ago. She called the show last week. And, you know, here they are in civilization, too. And they are resisting it, and their tradition, as you say, of course, it does, it emerges at a certain point within civilization. And so let me just quote here. She says, she's trying to reclaim what has been a part of our earliest history, a history that got traded off when we stopped being a nomadic pre-agricultural community. And so forth. In other words, you know, there's some very articulate people as well as sincere. They're not unfamiliar with the history of stuff. So it's an ongoing thing. And
Right. But even that statement, a nomadic pre-agricultural people, that wasn't Christian.
Well,
right?
No, it's the Judeo-Christian, though. That's
John the Baptist outside the city gates eating.
Well, not the pre-Jesus part. I mean, that goes back to when what's called Judaism was forming. And, you know, I think that's what that alludes to, is going back well before Christ, you know. And so what is that background? Because they are reinterpreting that. So, but if it's Christianity, that's what we're talking about. They're Christians, even though some people deny that. And I found that even more confusing. There is no Christianity. We're not in favor of religion. You know, I mean, the whole thing, so it's just kind of baffling. But
I don't really understand, linear chronological development of when did the Egyptian dynasty number 16 or mm-hmm. whichever one lasted 1,000 years of all the Egyptian dynasty. You know, what's the chronology here when you throw in Christianity and Judaism?
Yeah, and can you just cut loose some of the kind of defining features is another way to put it. You know, Dan Todd said something interesting. We were in communication last week, and this goes a certain distance. He says, these primitivist Christians carry all the baggage of the rest of Christianity. I mean, that's kind of what we're saying right here. But how come atheists aren't also subject to this thing? I mean, you don't say to an atheist, well, these other atheists are whatever they are, stupid or bloody or whatever. No, it's just an atheist. So, you know, it's kind of interesting that... I thought that was kind of a cute point. 541-346-0645. Let's kind of move on. Let me take a very, very brief shot at some of the major craziness of the week. I just want to, you know... The extreme weather has been front and center, and now it's, you know, what is obvious is becoming discussed more publicly. These unprecedented weather extremes in the past month linked to global warming. You think so? I mean, in other words, people are saying, well, of course. And some of these things Pakistan is just one of many, and that's really a calamity. They haven't been short on calamities, you know. But this is really amazing. And now all of the flooding, well, part of that is directly the melting of the Asian glaciers. And that's going to be a global catastrophe. So they have a lot of water now, but it's because the glaciers are melting. Is why they have a lot of water now. I mean, that's a very big part of it. So that's kind of obvious. But and so, you know, how much has the temperature gone up since the beginning of industrialism? It's easy to chart. It's well known, and it's going to worsen a lot. And you have all these things like late last week, this stinging jellyfish thing. All the beaches in Spain. So when you go to Portugal, don't go down to Spain. And this is due to climate change. This gigantic, it's just. And then in Russia, all the fires, the very, very toxic air in Moscow, over 700 people dying every day because of the fires. Well, there's a great deal about that, but a big part of it is the technological arrogance of draining the swamps, producing all this dry peat. It was a bog. Now it's just dry peat. It's burning underground, and there's almost no way to put that out. So thanks to technology, that has created an enormous thing. And well, I'm just going to cut this short. But and of course, Saturday in Buffalo, New York, 8 people shot at leaving a party in downtown Buffalo. Just a random deal. One person who lost his daughter said, "A senseless random killing. This kind of thing just has to stop." Yes, it does. And what would cause that to stop? Yesterday, a South Carolina mother suffocated her 2 toddler sons and then submerged them in a car in the river. I can't stop saying this. It's the same old tune, but I'm wondering when it's going to... Let's. How do we account for that? When is it going to stop? Anybody noticing that? Oh, one more thing about Russia, and then let's move into other things. The Russian state has denied this, apparently, but part of the area that's burning is the contaminated Chernobyl region. So you got a double disaster. To the technology effect is multiplied because the radiation there, now it's burning and it's airborne again. So, I hope they're right in saying, oh, no, that's not true. But, of course, they lie about everything at the beginning and hope to get away with it.
There's a quote in the New York Times calling it the Velvet Apocalypse from a Russian woman who was over there. In fact, if you'd let me just read this one sentence from her in Moscow last week. Talking about being in her neighborhood. The neighborhood, so familiar since my childhood, is almost invisible. There is no sky at all. The sun is there, dim and reddish brown, the color of dried blood. You could look straight at it without your eyes tearing, because they were not already tearing because of the acrid smoke. I know what's happening. It's a velvet apocalypse. A pigeon is dying on my balcony. Mm. That's like, you know, whoa.
Yeah, it's lyrical too, isn't it? You know, we were both looking at this post. It was a few days ago, Anarchist News. It was also at InfoShop, I think, called Anarchism versus Civilization. Part of the continuing discussion, which I think is getting better. I think it's more, a little more enriched, or, I mean, there's a little more discussion, there's a little more communication by this Margaret Killjoy. Margaret, who's a man, actually, but, so I'm glad to see that this conversation is getting a little more interesting. You read that piece too?
Yeah, I read the piece, and then I saw, last time I looked, I think there were 20 comments back and forth going on either Anarchy News or InfoShop.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was pretty interesting that this would basically, Killjoy was responding to a 2003 article. So I went back and looked that up. Anarchism versus Primitivism, to read the original. That was quite a while ago.
Doesn't go away. Well, you know, that maybe one thing I was thinking of maybe to start with on this thing is, in terms of all the replies, as you say, which are, as usual, kind of highly revealing. And some of them, you see the same thing on the part of the folks who are really not too interested in this conversation. And I would say these are just some of the misnomers, or the sometimes deliberately false statements, sometimes not at all deliberately false statements. I think this is just not any kind of deliberate misinformation. But one of them said, well, this primitivism is really what you get when you decide that civilization is going to collapse, that there's an inevitable collapse. I would say, no, I don't think so. That's what's called collapsism, by the way, that you're just kind of like going to passively wait, it'll go away. Might not go away. I mean, who can really say? At the way things are going now, yes, it's heading over the cliff, but I don't think that's quite accurate to say that at base it's this inevitability deal. Another thing, which is more, I'd say perhaps more political or pointed, is the idea, anytime, and you see this, some people always reach for this, oh, primitivism, didn't it fade away 10 years ago? It's just marginalized. It's just, you know, they're just whistling past the graveyard. They know that it's not true. It's making more inroads all the time. But if you say that, then somebody might believe it. Oh, I guess that's old hat, huh? Is that right? You know, well, that's nonsense. And another one is, here's a good one. The sort of argument or excuse for an argument that says, okay, well, there's all this stuff about civilization, but we don't really know what civilization is. It can mean 10 different things. And I always think, because I know, I can guess who some of these people are, Oh, would you say that about capitalism? Would you say, oh, we don't really know? No, you wouldn't. You would instantly say we're anti-capitalist. We're, you know, you would never get away with that. And it's even, if anything, it's clear to me what the common definition of civilization is known to everybody. It's nothing obscure or arcane or invented by some anarchists. It's what everybody thinks it is.
Well, I mean, I do think there's some merit in beginning to say, well, what is civilization? What does it mean? I was looking even, I had underlined on here that Shepherd says that primitivists are stuck in an illusory past that cannot be supported by evidence, argues that anarchism has always been about worker control. Anarchism, and then Margaret makes the case, anarchism is and always has been anti-civilization. And so I mean, I do think there's some merit in kind of breaking out and getting some commonality on what are we talking about? What are the terms? And I think the whole, if it's about worker control and it's anarchism, it's anarcho-syndicalism, and it has a period historically. There's evidence of its existence. There's organizations, especially in Spain, that were devoted to it, and it came to a sad end, you would have to say. And I was a part of a group in the 80s, Sojourner Truth Organization, that was anarcho-syndicalist in the United States. It certainly wasn't a major part of the New Left, and but it was early anarchism for myself. It was a transition from a Marxist, Leninist, Maoist type of thinking to, this kind of thing. But it still had the worker control, workers' council, independent workers' movement class as the kind of underlining way of understanding the world we lived in. And going back to my thing about primitivists stuck in a past that can't be supported by evidence, anarchism is anti-civilization. And I tend to prefer anti-civilization to the terminology primitivism. Mm-hmm. Primitivism, existed in the early century in art movements, and there's all kind of manifestations of what is primitivism that is not necessarily containing a Luddite or an insurrectionary, a fighting element.
No, that's right.
And anti-civilization, just by the nature of being anti, is there's a negativity and nihilism, something to it that is oppositional.
I think you're right.
So then that's when I get off into, what are we talking about? What is civilization?
Well, yeah, I mean, we should always define our terms. If you don't know what's meant by any term, technology or whatever it might be, of course, you're not contributing much to the conversation if people are not clear. But I think some people, this has been around for quite a long time now, and I think it's just kind of disingenuous for some people to say, oh, we don't even know what civilization is. I mean, as I said, you could play that same game with capitalism. There's all kinds of versions of it. When are we talking about it? What is really capitalism? You know what I mean? That's really, in that sense, it's a bad faith deal. Even though I do agree with you that...
I don't doubt there are the people where it's a bad faith deal, but I would say even in dealing with dialogue with the Christians, mm-hmm. that the whole concept of what is civil, how do you make a civilization? How do we get from banned society to high tech, mm-hmm. The present that we're living today? What built it? How was it built? And so that's where I say the thing of understanding, well, what is a civilization? What's tools? Okay, tools mm-hmm. and technology. What's that role from early on? How does that contribute to civilization, and what other path could have been taken?
That uncovers really so succinctly there. That's exactly the thing, and that opens up exactly how we are here. Why has it come to this? What didn't happen overnight? And yeah, it's for those people who Yeah, it depends on. I mean, you can tell some people are just trying to get away with stuff by pressing that, and they're well aware of it. But that probably isn't important. I mean, there are so many people, and as you mentioned, the growing interest in this, in particular, all these folks who showed up in Portland. I think they're very honestly interested. Many of them have probably never heard of any of this kind of discussion or questioning. So, yeah, exactly. I think if people are just hearing this kind of stuff for the first time, I mean, I would just say in passing here, Civilization and Its Discontents by Sigmund Freud, that means domestication. That's the founding principle and the inner logic of the whole thing. You know, that's why people are unhappy, according to Freud. That's one way to put it. It is domestication. It is that control thing, that massive shift, and it makes people psychically unhappy at a profoundly deep level, and that is defining to Freud, and I think he was right as far as he went with that. That's pretty, it's kind of common knowledge if you look into it, and it's everything is open. I mean, I think this entire questioning is open. I mean, even though some things are available to people, there's no big secrets about this stuff, but in terms of the dialogue, and once you have that indictment, for example, what are the consequences of that? The obvious question again, what do you do with it? Okay, so civilization is inherently bad, so what? I mean, so it's just the opening to a discussion. And so people that are trying to bury that discussion, come on, you can do better than that. Let's start going on it. Let's tackle some of these things and see if we get somewhere.
Well, and I mean, that's where I think the whole thing, what is anarchism? What is, how does, if anarchism is looking for, is advocating a change from hierarchy and lack of autonomy, then how does domestication relate to that?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What's the inner workings? And I would say, again, going back to the Christians, when you start, if you say, okay, at the very beginning, we're going to go with Freud and talk about, okay, it's domestication. What's the impact of, what comes next? Mm-hmm. So when division of labor early, what are the things that are happening early on when the band is transitioning mm-hmm. from roaming the countryside to, maybe we could use a shaman here, mm-hmm. Hey, we're having a great old time drawing on the cave walls, and this is kind of cool, and it's abstract, and this kind of thing, to, this feeling a little mystical, maybe God's visiting, but there were changes. There were changes all along, and it's, I think that's where the question of, we all can begin to grapple with, what is civilization? How did it get? Mm-hmm. What are the things that got us from here to there? And so then how do we get from here to a more compatible way of existing with the planet that we occupy? We've gotten so out of balance, so out of sync. The civilization has gotten believes, what is it? What was the book we were talking about? The nature without...
Oh, yes.
How is that? Environmentalism?
Ecology without nature?
Ecology without nature. Or something like, screw nature. We've won. It's going to be all manufactured society.
What is nature? You can just, there's sophistry sometimes. But I think we both thought this was worth bringing up. And the obvious connotation here is that anarchism should be against civilization. And this is... it does justice to this. I don't know totally where this particular writer is coming from, but it seemed like it seems to me that this is moving forward, and more people are finding it helpful or necessary or whatever it might be to have the conversation. Or you can just stick with the 19th century and you want self-managed oppression and self-managed civilization and self-managed industrial slavery and all the rest of it, and that doesn't seem to sell very much anymore, even though people are saying, oh, primitivism is a... Oh, that came and went, didn't it? No. What came and went is, like you said, the syndicalist thing. And I passed through that same stuff that you did, basically. You know, the steps through, starting with the left and the different things that were going on. And then, you know. Anyway, I think we're going to take a little music break. Maybe a little action news, and then we can get more
conversation.
Continue
on and see if anybody calls in. What's the number again?
541-346-0645. Anarchy Radio is an editorial collage made up of the voices of guests, callers, and its host, John Zerzan. The opinions expressed are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of KWVA, Eugene, or anyone else. Got a few very brief action reports? Didn't have any last week. We didn't even pause for that in the dialogue that was going on last week with the Christian primitivists. Okay, at the end of the month, end of July, a giant poultry factory farm under construction in Lower Saxony, Germany, was burned. Gigantic place, property damage estimated at £500,000. This is going to be part of Europe's largest chicken slaughterhouse outfits. A new courthouse is being constructed in Moncton, Canada, in New Brunswick, I believe that is. Several floors were wrecked, including construction equipment of $10,000 worth of damage. Somebody didn't like the new Justice Center. And genetic engineering stuff, part of the setup here is a report from North Dakota. nearly all the canola is that's makes a noise when you do it. Let's see. Sorry. North Dakota canola GM stuff escaping and growing along the roads. They're finding it everywhere. Just perhaps not a good thing. Anyway, in Italy, a group of 70 No Global. You ever heard of that outfit? No Global? I don't know.
No.
Who that is. Huh. It's Italian, I guess. In somewhere in northeastern Italy, Pordenone. Anyway, they went to a genetically modified maize GM plant, crushed all the plants, and prevented their harvest, just kind of ripped it all up. There's a lot of opposition to GM crops in Italy, I think way more than in the U.S. I don't think there's much awareness of that here, but...
I've seen some disturbing numbers. I can't remember offhand, but the amount of crop, you know, the amount that's genetically engineered now of what's being grown by agribusiness is very, very, you know, very worrisome. High percentages, yeah.
Bad news. Last week, some green anarchists set up a camp on Londonderry Road in Ireland, County Tyrone. This is an anti-freeway project deal. They're proposing a new A5. It's in the UK, they like that those types of designations for their freeway system. It just says anarchist group organized with our leaders, direct action, and they link it to climate change, for example. So that's kind of ongoing. Last Wednesday in southwest Delhi, street cleaning workers in India, street fighting happened. Several cars were burned. Police had to fire shots to control this. Some 900 temporary street cleaner workers, widespread rioting in the Najafgarh district of Delhi, southwest Delhi. And also last Wednesday, 5,000 Bangladeshis attacked a power station and clashed with riot police. They were, many of them, armed with iron rods and stones, smashed vehicles, but for the cops. And this is a kind of classic example, it seems, of people being trapped in the system and then it doesn't deliver. This is about having no power. The chronic electricity shortages. And Saturday, 14 anarchists were arrested in Chile. That's not the action part of it. The action part of it, this was, I guess, prefaced in the media, kind of leaked out in the media before it happened. They're having this crackdown, probably involved more than 14. But this is because there have been over 100 bombings and arsons in Chile, especially in Santiago, I believe.
And what kind of things?
Well, I know banks have been a target. I think this is just kind of a somewhat of a regularized anti-authoritarian deal. And they're trying to pin it all on anarchists, evidently. This just happened over the weekend. And our favorite anarchists against the wall, the Palestinians and Israeli anarchists against the apartheid wall there, of course, and against more seizures of land from Palestinians. They put out another statement. You know, they have for years now the well-known Friday activities, the protests, and this latest comment from yesterday referred to the too mild involvement of the Israeli radical left while this struggle is expanding and intensified. And so now the Israeli state, they say, has tried to repress this joint struggle of Israelis and Palestinians. And now they've had to resign themselves to contain it. So they're saying that they're making progress. And that, by the way, the Gaza flotilla scandal, a month ago or so, has increased immensely the number of international activists coming to participate in the joint struggle. So they keep pushing on against the wall under that. Here's a quickie on the Nature Strikes Back thing from Sri Lanka. Battle between rice agriculture and elephants. Rampaging elephants. And this is where the lowland agriculture meets the forest, meets the jungle, and the elephants come out and cross the fields, trample everything, and occasionally trample farmers. So this is just it's a common but deadly thing, as they point out, in these border agricultural areas that were home to the elephants. They're not too happy. Okay, let's see what else we heard something from the Coalition Against Work and Civilization in South Asia, which is a small group in India. I think you could probably find this, see what they might be up to. It's called Coalition Against Work and Civilization in South Asia. Got something about a week ago. Nice to see that. We're going to have a guest, by the way. Labor Day weekend, roughly. Fellow friend of some friends we've made in India, friends of Vilas and others. He'll be here 3 or 4 days. Maybe we can get together. Want to see if I could get him on the air before he leaves. He's somebody I haven't met. He was not in India when we were there. Okay, yeah, that's about it. I think I'll just leave that. You know, we were talking about robots the last time you were here.
Okay.
And some of the growing reporting and literature on the how now, after, you know, this is kind of blocked for a while, it seems to me, like a lot of things, like artificial intelligence. We've made these breakthroughs. Not really. And then, you know, 10 or 20 years go by, they don't really have much to report. But the robotics thing seems to be going nuts, like we were talking about. Carol sent me this one. It's a quote from a longer piece. I mean, it might have even been from that same big New York Times one, but I think this is separate. Some health professional called Canamiero, this is a quote, said that children might find that a small, friendly-looking robot that can understand their emotional state could make them less anxious when it comes to preparing for medical treatment. Isn't that something? A machine can understand their emotional state? Humans can't. Like the baby cry app that tells you what the baby cry means. You need a machine to tell you that. That's pretty basic, pretty astounding. And they just say these things as if people are supposed to believe that. You know, you wouldn't want to comfort the child. You know, you'd just sit in a robot. Of course you would, because the robot would understand their emotional needs, you know.
And that was in reference to schooling for testing, reassure them before testing.
Well,
this was medical.
Yeah,
medical,
this is a hospital setting, I believe, where they want to have
the robot. Remember, you know, the robot in Eugene, the pharmacy robot?
Oh, right.
Yeah, we saw the little robot working in the pharmacy,
going back and forth. Yeah,
yeah.
Over at.
It was Good Health. What's your peace plan or something?
Yeah, it's a kind of spinoff from Sacred Heart over there in Willamette and 12th.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, the robotics for your friend or for your, help make you feel better about your medical test. All these wonderful things that civilization is bringing to us.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, here's another. This is just, we're just having some fun with these crazy things. But don't hesitate to call in 541-346-0645, of course. You know, all this stuff about cheating is universal, you know, in all the schools, and plagiarism, academic studies are all fudged and plagiarized, you know. People write memoirs and they're completely made up. You know, there's no end to this kind of stuff. Well, here's this piece about Mark Hauser at MIT, or not at Harvard, actually. Just a big name, just becoming a really big gunner. Wrote a book about, he's explored the origins of morality, the nature of morality, humans as moral creatures, you know. Well, guess what? He's facing 8 charges of It doesn't quite say what it is, but it's something about fabricated results, you know, fabricated data. This is great. The guy who's writing the book about morality, he's just as phony and crooked as these other characters. They've confiscated his laboratory and his records, his computers, and yeah, this is hilarious. The big Harvard star, Mr. Morality.
Mr. Morality, who's, for some reason, somebody doesn't like him anymore and has decided he plagiarized his treatise.
Yeah. Well, here's another one. Speaking of the Times, you see this one? This was just yesterday. Some of these kind of neuroscientist types floating, they're taking a big rafting trip in Utah. It's very inconclusive. Some of these people think that the total immersion of people, all kinds of electronic devices, it's okay. And of course, the others say thinking and focusing and everything is being completely undermined by how pervasive it all is. It's kind of an interesting piece. It gets into a little bit of the history of all this stuff. And one of the things that I guess they sort of agree on is take a rafting trip. And it'll help out. It'll at least take a break. You know, heavy technology use can inhibit deep thought and cause anxiety, etc. And that getting out into nature can help. Well, I hope they didn't get too many millions of dollars for figuring that one out.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because one of the articles I brought from the New York Times was they were featuring some couple in Portland as an example of downsizing can make you happy. And that, you know, consuming less, simplicity in your life, that in fact happiness comes from that kind of approach. So you've got the, you know, it's part of this whole study the brain, cognitive research that's going on that I don't know how, what to say. Like you start putting together the whole robotics and artificial intelligence and all this whole trying to understand neural networks and relationship to computers and the web and, you know, understanding and all this human technological interface interaction. And God, what was some of the stuff? Oh, Facebook. New York Times also talking about Facebook and adolescence, constructing your own, like, what is self? Constructing through external stimuli what it is. And so exaggerations of what an adolescent used to typically do. You've got it there.
Some great stuff. It's called The Language of Fakebook by Katie Royfe. Here's my favorite quote from this thing. It's pretty critical. It's quite, I mean, it said, well, teenagers are teenagers. You know, what are you going to, you want profound, you know, super stuff? I mean, they're just kids. But she says, I love this line, friendship on Facebook bears about the same relationship to friendship in life as being run over by a car in a cartoon resembles being run over by a car in life. So that's a pretty good line. That kind of gets down to the basic thing.
That was good. I was trying to find here my copy of it because there were a couple things in that. Another just along the same lines. What does it mean to be human? And what's your identity? Who are you? This whole thing on forgetting, the ability to forget. New York Times did that a week ago. Follow up, and that the whole, just like you construct your identity through Facebook, but you don't erase that. That's there forever.
Oh, yes.
And
yes.
So then the whole humans and memory and history and the ability to forget is really important.
Yeah, and the access that the state and the corporations have, the eternal, it never goes away. That's why it makes some of these ads seem to me like there's two. Well, there's a big BlackBerry one. There's been full page ads. This is just a big cell phone ad, a big iPhone ad. Just shows a big iPhone, basically. And it says, introducing everything you want with the one thing you need. So the one thing you need, you know, is, gee, what could it be? Love or meaning or value? No, of course not. It's just a little device here. Or the Verizon one. And Alice was commenting on this. This is more striking. It's mostly billboards, I think. I haven't really seen this in the print media that much. Verizon Air Power, rule the air. You know, they kind of give you this sense of you are empowered, you know, if you buy their stuff. And that's...
Right. What is the human empowerment?
Yeah.
BlackBerry 101.
Yeah, Air Power, rule the air. Just kind of... I mean, that's not, you know, entirely new either, but it's... These claims, you know, even with the kind of military edge. Oh, we got somebody on the line?
Yeah, it's Bill from Atlanta.
Hello, Bill.
Hey, John, how are you?
Good, how's it going?
It's good. Something a little off topic. I'm reading Lier Keith's The Vegetarian Myth right now, and I was just wondering what your opinion was. If you read the book, what your opinion is of her book?
I'm not very familiar with it. I just know it about in a general sense. If you read, how far have you gotten in there?
I'm skipping through it, and I've gotten to where she talks about the health benefits of eating grass-fed, you know, beef, pasture-raised, chickens and hogs.
It's got a pretty good reputation, and as you may also know here, she's been treated, well, she's been pied, among other things, treated as an apostate. She's wandered from the true vegan faith, and so this is her, as I understand it, that book was kind of her coming out. I'm not a vegan anymore, for the reasons some of which she just started to mention. So that's kind of the background on that.
Okay, because I tried the vegan diet for a while, and I couldn't do it. I started getting headaches and what have you, but I just really wanted your opinion, and you hear about the FDA food pyramid, and if it's like anything else from the government, it's just a bunch of BS.
Well, you know, one thing that comes to mind, and I hope I'm not stretching too far to put this in here, but big news at the end of the week in terms of anthropology, you might have noticed this ancient tool use. It's put back human ancestors' use of tools some 800,000 years, well back into what is generally thought as Homo species, back to Australopithecus afarensis.
Mm-hmm.
Lucy, you know, the famous Lucy in the 70s,
right.
3.2 million
right.
years ago. This is 3 to 4 million years ago. It's even further back. And it wasn't clear whether Lucy was a tool user. But the reason I bring it up here is this was, the evidence here is cut marks made by stone tools on bones. The rib of some kind of cow-sized deer or something like that, suggesting our human ancestors were ripping meat from the bones. In other words, we didn't need this to tell us that humans have been eating meat for a couple of million years. And so,
okay.
You know, there's a lot to be said for a vegan diet in some ways, but one of the things that kind of jumps out is that it's quite ahistorical. Not by every, I mean, I'm not saying that no vegan is aware that humans used to eat meat, but, you know, it seems to me, kind of overlooks that we are a species that developed by eating meat. There were big changes that happened when people started cooking meat. I mean, there's all kinds of these kind of developmental things, evolutionary things that, you know.
Was that primarily brain development
Yes.
they're talking about? The eating of meat
Yeah.
aided in the evolution of the human
uh-huh.
brain?
And cooking of meat to make it easier to digest and so forth, and instead of more of a plant diet, you know, becoming more upright, less of a pot-bellied animal, and more of a larger brain, which requires more energy per
okay.
pound, you know, that sort of thing.
Good, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, man. Thanks for bringing it up. See you later.
Uh, It was interesting. I had that article, too, on the tool use beginning earlier than thought. Mm-hmm. And they had the line in there, raises new questions about the role of tools in spurring human evolution. Mm-hmm. And that was where it's kind of trying to go with the primitivism, anti-civilization, as to, you know, use of tools into technology, the... How does this add up to where we are today? So if they start, you know, even finds like this where you start dating back further, mm-hmm. that the use of tools by, you know, the upright animals. Okay.
Well, one thing it says is, or it seems to imply, they're saying this is not a Homo species, not a human species, but maybe it is, you know, because they are pointing out that they... In this case, large distances were involved, according to the evidence, of bringing the kind of stones that were needed for these tools. There aren't any primates that carry tools around, so already that maybe argues that no, it wasn't Australopithecus; it was already Homo something. Pick a new name for Homo. I don't know that it wasn't developed, but you know, like maybe you're implying there. That we were already human, and how you define that is itself a question.
Right. But I think that is kind of the question in many ways, as to if we don't have a good grounding and sort of consensus on what is human, what is my identity? Is it, who are my friends on Facebook? You know, are they Facebook? Is this a friend? Our terminology, our language can say, you know, so like these critical subjects. I had another article here on language that came, was talking about language, you know, how we think, the way we talk makes us think a certain way was being proposed, rather than we think a certain way, so we talk this way. Mm-hmm. And then it made some comparisons with language in more indigenous or primitive groups where, or even other Western countries where blame is not given. I think Spain and Japan or something, they said, I broke the vase versus, there's no way of saying that. It would be the vase was broken. But there was an individual breakage. So anyway, going off point here, just those kind of things, understanding what makes civilization, you know, I'm making an argument that that's a pertinent question beyond Freud and domestication, division of labor, technology, economics, you know, Definitely. Having an economy, having a government, all these kind of things are, you know, where to me, I agree with Margaret, that anarchy can only be anti-civilization.
Wow. That's cool. Maybe we should just end it there. That's that's an excellent summary position, I would say, not to put words in his mouth, but yeah, I thought that was the thrust of it. And especially as we see things just multiplying, it's just so much more scary and coming on faster and faster. I mean, in every way, the all of these giant dams, you know, more about the Montebello in Brazil, and how many hundreds of thousands are going to be displaced by the Three Gorges Dam in China. These are just unbelievably massive changes. I saw in the National Geographic that when they fill up the reservoirs of behind the Three Gorges Dam, it's going to move the Earth's axis off by an inch.
Ooh.
The weight, the actual impact physically on the planet is... and then we've got these other things, like the digital... You know, what's happening to people, yeah, there you go, whatever you call it, the developing world, the global south, the third world, poisoning all these people with an avalanche of computers and cell phones and all this other trash. It's just, you know...
Right. You know. All on the outside, and then on the inside, you got the same thing where you've got here the new psychiatric classification where we'll treat grief with pharmacology. So mourning no longer will be a part of being human, it's not even just human. Other animals born too. So
yeah,
it's just like
do.
This crazy torquing and twisting.
Good point. The inside as well as the inner nature as well as outer nature. Okay, again, no show next week. Thank you so much, Catherine.
It's been nice.
Be Cliff in 2 weeks. Maybe you'll sharpen your knives and call up Cliff and get into it about Zizek. You know, we'll see. All right, take care.
Good night.